3, which is the open public input, and we have about 3 or 4 folks that want to talk. And before I get to that, I forgot there is an announcement. We do not have any land transactions for the March meeting, so agenda item number 5 on our agenda is not there any longer. For the open public input, I think you all know the rules. 3 minutes, beeper will go off, and that signifies the end. You can bring your thoughts to a conclusion, but do so quickly, please. And I'm going to call you up 2 at a time. There's only about 4 of you. So Tim Adderson and Cindy Olson, please. So, Tim, you kick her off. Right, just there, and pull the little mic up close, please.
Good day. I'm your customer, and I'm a pheasant hunter. I spend monies hunting pheasant that benefits merchants and the state. I ask you right now to go to the Department of Fish and Wildlife webpage and tell me when the pheasant season opens this fall and in 2018. Now go to the websites of North Dakota and South Dakota, and you'll find the answer to the question I just asked. Why is the state of Washington unable to supply me with this information? The confusion on changing dates started with Dave Ware, as I understand, retired from the Department of Fish and Game, and you can see his game trails document, 1999, and I'm sure it's available to the department. Prior to Mr. Ware, the Game Commission approved seasons 3 years in advance, and prior to the end of the 3rd year, approved another 3 years. There was a formula that was used something like this. The first Saturday after the 10th of October was the general opener for the upland game and deer. The commission, as well as the department, I am sure, is not aware of the fact that citizens that must bid vacation time a year in advance from companies that do this for operational planning, and I was employed at company... such a company. I will now read you some emails and responses from the department where I wanted to find out about some hunting seasons. And this is from 2015. And the reply I got, thank you for contacting Department of Fish and Wildlife. All our approved season dates are available online as summary of general hunting season dates. If you go to that right now, you'll see the hunting dates for 2016. Another one from 2016, very nice gentleman, Matthew with the Department of Game. He goes on to say, according to pages 142 and 143 of the 2015 to 2021 game management plan, pheasant season opening dates have been held the weekend after the opening day of modern firearms since 2004. You go to that, there's no information. Communications is not expensive and very easy. Please help the department use these tools. I want the department and the commission to be mindful of their customers so that customers can plan their hunting holidays in advance. I would also suggest the department look at the drop-down menus on the state department's website for shrimping in the state of Washington. It's simple yet effective and very informative. Drop-down menus for game species seasons would serve the customer well. Moving forward, make seasons the same year after year so not only the hunters but the merchants as well that caters to the hunters can plan. This information should be applied to the Washington State Farm Bureau as landowners are customers too. I'll look forward to these wants being implemented. While I am one, I believe I speak for many. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Then those are well-taken points, and I notice your lapel pin, and they're not easily given out, so thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you for noticing.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to have a brief comment about that because I grew up pheasant hunting in the Yakima Valley, and went. You had to make your reservations for lodging a year in advance. A year in advance. And now you can go over there. If you know when it opens, you can go over there and get a room anytime. It's rather appalling the way the opportunity has deteriorated. And I too, about 10 years ago, started going to North Dakota. It's a whole different approach to business and income on behalf of merchants and the state. I would just encourage the director and staff to let's get on this. I know we've had some things in eastern Washington as it relates to farming practices that have hurt the pheasant population, but it doesn't have to be this bad. I mean, there can be better communication, outreach, public education, and give more to our customers than what you've just described, sir.
Mr. Carpenter, it's not my intent to throw the department under the train.
Good.
It's not at all. I just want to bring something to light as a concerned citizen and as a participant. And that's my intent to be here today.
And it's our intent to try and help fix it.
Well, I've met the director and a couple of times, and I have faith in him, and we'll move forward. Thank you.
Indeed.
Thank you. Fran Segrin, please, and Cindy.
I'm Cindy Olson, and I'm representing the Washington Sporting Dog Training Association. And just a quick brief update, we've expanded our reach of our organization to Spokane, Tri-Cities, and southwestern Washington. We've invited 57 dog training associations to participate, and 30% are now association members. We're getting called by other clubs to present our issues with regard to dog training in the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area to them. And we as a group intend to continue our efforts to secure the historical dog training that we've lost in the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area. In preparing for this meeting, I was a bit disappointed with the fact that the department chose to present to the commission the bird dog training plan. The plan was created after our last meeting with the subgroup and was not discussed at a meeting with the actual dog training group. The bird dog training plan, and it does not address our biggest issue is why in the last several years we've been restricted to 10 to 15 acres on various units when we used to have hundreds of acres available to us for dog training. Specific to the bird training plan, we were told in one of the earlier meetings, several of the earlier meetings, we'd have 65 acres available for training dogs in the 2017 season. It doesn't look like we'll have any type of an approval until late spring, maybe early summer, so maybe we'll get 1 or 2 months' worth of training on that acreage. The plan says we're going to have 65 acres, and that looks good on paper, but the bottom line is 30 of those 65 acres are going to be in agricultural crops, potentially making it totally non-functional for dog training, so it takes us back to 15 to 30 acres that we've been having over the last couple of years. In a conference call, we were told that we would have some input as to where the crops were going to be planted. Where the crops are planted are key to us because if they plant a lot of corn across the face of what we're planning to train through, we can't train our dogs if we can't see them, and we can't see them if they're going through cornfields. We were told we'd have some input as to what crops were planted, but now in other paperwork that I've been reading through, the agricultural plan is already set. They're just waiting for a farmer to bid the property, and then the agricultural plan will be implemented with no input from the dog training community. Then again, the dog training plan is for 1 year with no assurance that it's going to continue into the future. And what we see right now is that we're going to have to be arguing and fighting for our historical training grounds each and every year. This plan, once again, seems to be a case of our land, our rules. This plan is something that WDFW can live with. And it seems to, once again, be giving us as little training land as possible. With regard to the agricultural lease, and I did a handout for this morning, okay, the 90 acres that they have under agriculture, 100% of that was dog training land. 30 of those acres were supposed to be in the 65 acres we were going to, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to get those lands. So we would just like to ask the commission to direct the department to work with us to restore our historical dog training lands in the near term, as opposed to fighting for this over the next 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Any questions? Points well taken. As the father of an English setter, I don't know what the word training means. But
yes.
Hope springs eternal.
Yeah. Russ, could you comment on what Cindy just...
Sure.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Terry Sato, please, and Fran.
My name is Fran Segrin, and I'm here representing the Washington Retriever Club today. I've been a member and on the board for more than 20 years. I believe the club's been in existence for over 35 years. Our club is a training club, and we don't put on licensed events. We put on training days and picnic field trials. I should say we used to put on training days in addition to the two picnic trials each year, but the land that was available to us has been taken away. And I'm specifically talking today about the Cherry Valley area. The Washington Retriever Club depends almost entirely on public land to hold our events. Because we're a training club, our membership and entry fees are a fraction of what a licensed event would cost. Our goal is to have inexpensive but focused and fun competitions early each year. By holding our events in January and February, it helps prepare dogs and handlers for the hunt test and field trial season that starts up in the spring. Washington Retriever Club used to have two picnic trials each year, one at Joint Base Lewis-McCorn and one at Cherry Valley. One was held in January and the other one in February. During the spring and summer months, we had at least one training day at Cherry Valley using the ponds that were perfect for these activities, and that all stopped suddenly about 4 years ago. Excuse me. Those of us that hunt and buy our licenses and bird stamps and more each year feel we have been taken advantage of by public employees that just decided to make their own rules in their own best interest. Obviously, we're upset. That's why I'm here today. I'm representing a group of people, the members of Washington Retriever Club, who will now be part of a larger organization that Cindy just spoke of, the Washington Sporting Dog Training Association. So to wrap it up, we want our dog training grounds back at Cherry Valley. We want the ponds, the land, and the gate open from dark till dawn, like it was supposed to be. Excuse me again. It's a reasonable and fair request. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Jim Olson, please. And Terry?
Hi, I'm Terry Sato. Good morning. I'm here to talk about the historical use of the Snoqualmie Valley Wildlife Area in dog training. I've lived in the Snoqualmie Valley near Duval since 1968, and my history with dog training in the Snoqualmie Valley Wildlife Areas began in 1994 when I was asked to help with a tracking test being held at Crescent Lake. And soon after, I started training my own labs for hunting at both Cherry Valley and Crescent Lake. I learned that training a good hunting retriever takes more than patience. It takes land. And it takes land with different terrain. It takes land with water. Land and water found at the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area is perfect. And, of course, no surprise, that's our hunting grounds. So a little history. It was about 45 years ago that your department began the process of applying for grants through the Bureau of Outdoor Recreation to purchase the land in the Snoqualmie Valley. Dog training was clearly stated as one of the uses for the Stillwater property, and in fact, a documented proposal describes Stillwater as ideal, not only for training, but for dog trials, and currently none of the 450-odd acres at Stillwater is designated for dog training. Approval for the purchase of Cherry Valley from Cherry Valley Farms came through in 1976. Cherry Valley Farms was a hunting club with man-made ponds designed specifically for dog training. For years, dog clubs such as the Northwest Retriever Trial Club, which is the oldest field trial club west of the Mississippi, held field trials on these grounds. Other clubs, the Puget Sound Lab Retriever Association, Rainier Hunting Club, and many others, all held their training and their tests on the Cherry Valley property. Tracking tests were also held here, and a minimum of 125 acres, including ponds, was designated for this use. In 2004, the WDFW posted this description: "The Cherry Valley Wildlife Area provides the public with opportunities to hunt, fish, and train hunting dogs. The major recreational use is waterfowl hunting and pen-reared pheasant hunting. Other major uses include dog walking and training, and nature observation. The unit has two parking lots for recreational users. This was an area that encouraged outdoor recreation. Currently, only one parking lot is available. Training is reduced to 15 acres that's covered with sticker bushes and Himalayan blackberries. So what changed? A restoration project was funded in 2012, and a new manager was hired in 2013. The project was only supposed to close the grounds for 180 days. The gates were closed, and they have not reopened. According to the property rights supervisor, the restoration project would only trigger review if it terminated public use of property previously allowed. The gates are closed. There's only one parking lot, and no ponds are available. Management is not living up to the terms of the project, as well as its obligation to the public. I understand that maintenance dollars are tight, and dog training groups do generate funds. The majority of my training buddies are hunters. They purchase hunting licenses for the state. Training in the off-season keeps both dog and hunter fit. And in fact, many of my training partners are well into their 80s, and so this is obviously a healthy pursuit. I'm the exception. I'm not a hunter. However, my discovery pass and my tax dollars pay the same amount to the state as do any other stakeholder using the grounds. And all of the clubs pay all the permits and fees that are required when they hold events there. So I train my retrievers to hunt because it's their purpose in life. It's my outdoor recreation. And dogs are good hunters only if they can learn to heel off leash, retrieve birds when sent, and take direction without disturbing excess land, and this can only happen if they're trained. Dating back to the purchase of this land, the game department has supported dog training. You had a program with a slogan, conserve game, hunt with a trained dog, so please restore the use of these lands to dog training.
Thank you, Terry. Any questions? Yes.
Well, there again, reading down the agenda in number 7, they're going to speak to this, but these people aren't going to have any chance to rebut after the presentation, are they?
No. Yeah, we can move it up.
Could we do that? Because there again, what they're saying resonates really well with me.
Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Any?
But I do think after they make the presentation, these people ought to have the opportunity in which to.
So that's. We'll put it in number 5, which is empty anyhow. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Okie dokie. So Barbara Holly, please, and Jim.
Commissioners and Dr. Unsworth, my name is Jim Olson. I'll be speaking today on the wildlife area. Squamish Valley wildlife areas are traditional allowed dog training and field trial events. Cherry Valley, Stillwater, for example, the information in the back. Crescent Lake, Eby Island. In the past several years, land available for dog training has been drastically reduced in various units. Cherry Valley has gone from 386 acres to 15 acres. Stillwater, 456 acres to 10 acres. Crescent Lake, 360 acres to 11.5 acres. Eby Island, none of the 1,237 acres are available. And a farmer who says there is no reason not to have dog training there. WDF&W allows dog trials and events on land, but currently WDF&F staff has no concept of the land required to put on an event. Basic training for field trial dogs needs 65 acres. AKC hunt test is 80-plus acres. Field trials and tracking tests, 125 acres. And pointer training and trials take 200 acres. Field trial and other AKC events require a considerable amount of land to operate safely. I'm involved in the AKC event as Puget Sound Labrador's Association's field committee chair, functioning gun captain for several venues. I'm a Washington State hunter safety instructor and range safety officer. In order to shoot live shot flyers, we need space and safe shooting areas for these events. Where WDF Endeavor says we can apply for permits to run these events, they certainly do not allow us space to conduct the events safely. On another topic, WDFW seems to feel that the SWA is their land, and as expressed in writing by an enforcement officer who, and also by a biologist in our meeting, the idea that WDF and W takes the position, our land, our rules, does not lend itself to believing that WDF now really means to work with us in resolving the situation.
Thank you. Any questions? And Jay Gordon, please. And Barbara.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Hawley. I'm a member of the Puget Sound Labrador Retriever Association and the Rainier Club for hunting and hunt test events. I'm also a member of the Washington Sporting Dog Training Association. As you've heard from my colleagues recently, we've been shut out of our training grounds for some time. The specific gates of Cherry Valley have been locked for many years. We have continually met with WDFW, with the directors and their subordinates, and had very, what we thought, productive meetings, coming to conclusions that we thought were going to be positive for all parties, only to find within a week or two, 180 degrees would be turned and we'd be losing our 65 acres on the Cherry Valley land. I'd like to point out that in 1970, there was specifically a wildlife biologist from the WFW that stated that this was an excellent area for field trials, retriever trials, and pointing dogs, a fast-growing sport in this area. We are members 100 up to 1,000 strong. We have disability people that come and join in, senior citizens, and citizens from all walks of life, painters, construction workers, attorneys, doctors, medical teams. And we all participate in the love of training a sporting dog, whether we hunt or run them in retriever trials. Children come and participate. You will see a PowerPoint display here from the WDFW, and they have a child with a whistle around her neck with a hunting dog sitting next to her. Unfortunately, we've not been allowed to do these events on the Cherry Valley facility, which is really a shame. We have picnic trials, family events that all participate in this. We actually offer scholarships in some cases from our hunting clubs for children that participate in this. We are losing a very important entity, the training of a fine hunting dog, which is a family dog. It actually is the breeding stock for our fine hunting dogs. It reaches out across our country, and some become actual service dogs. I would like to point out the position of the WDFW, even though we've had very pleasant meetings, has been such emails that have gone back and forth where they have regarded us as a nuisance, we don't pay our fair share, and we, in fact, are very, very pushy, none of which has been the case. These attitudes have done nothing to facilitate a positive outcome for us to have our gates unlocked at Cherry Valley. Our parking lot is no longer available to us on the grounds. The gates are locked, and yet we don't have an answer. They rotate crops, they say, for weed control, and yet I have here for all of you to participate in looking at, a copy for each of you, from a wetland forest ecologist stating that the best way to control canary grass, which has been the actual excuse from the WDFW, is not for planting corn or barley, but to treat it like blackberries with mowing and poisoning. There's another one from Radke and Associates that's in my Dropbox. I would be glad to share it with you. But this is an important excuse that they've been using over and over again. The Cherry Valley restoration has been completed since last year in June. I spoke to the director of it. There's no reason why those gates cannot be unlocked. We would like to have our rights restored to us. We buy discovery passes, hunting passes, and we pay our taxes. Please give our lands back to us.
Thank you. And Jay, you're the last one for this morning, or this part of the morning.
At least it's not lunch waiting for you. For the record, my name is Jay Gordon. I am the policy director for the Washington State Dairy Federation. I'm also a sixth-generation farmer. I farm about 900 acres in the lower Chehalis Valley and have a pretty healthy flock of geese that call my place home, along with other things. Couple things today. I'll try and make it back this afternoon for your comment and presentation on the goose season. Appreciate the department's work trying to find some different ways to manage geese for us. Been working with you guys for a number of years on this, as we've seen especially the snow geese in the northwest corner of the state grow. Down in southwest Washington, appreciate the late hunt and the youth hunts. We're trying to bring some new folks in and did have a couple of kids that hunted during that late season and big smiles on their face and dead geese hanging from their hands, which means they're not eating my fields. So everybody except the goose was happy. However, and I think this is going to be in your presentation, and I see your guys working on trying to figure it out. The Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday hunt schedule in Southwest Washington puts us down to 45 hunting days. By eliminating most of November, also eliminates a big chunk of hunting days in there. You know, we've got a treaty right or a treaty obligation to only have something like 107 days. Really would like to see those spring hunts and a little more, some more days. Those 45 days, you know, guy, it just sort of falls off guys' radar. They just, when there's just that little hunting opportunity and it's only on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Obviously, Saturdays and Sundays are great, but certainly would like to see that. Second piece is we had hoped to see that spring hunt in the Skagit in Northwest Washington. Obviously not if it reduces us to 45 days, but that's where we're really seeing the impact of the snow geese on our farm fields. Once hunting season stops, those geese just park in the fields, and they start at the water holes and the sheet waters middle of the fields, and they work out. And, you know, my farmers up there said when we got done with the snow and the geese there in February, it was just, the term was a slop hole. We're also, we've suspected and we've had Skagit County help us a couple of times do DNA analysis to determine the load on the shellfish beds from those geese. So far it's not showing a huge load, but I've had a number of farmers this year say we need to go back to the county and do some more DNA source and load evaluations, because some of my farmers this year said when that snow melted, it was just green ooze coming off some of these fields, and we're doing our darndest to get those shellfish beds open, and we're looking at everybody, at dairies, septics, you know, waterfowl. Like I said, right now the DNA load work that we did with Skagit and ecology showed the load isn't huge. It's a load, 2-3%. But this year, the combination of snow and as we're seeing more birds on less land, we're going, hey, not only for our farm fields, but for water quality work, for the shellfish beds, we're trying to manage this population. So I'll try and make it back this afternoon. I had another schedule. Appreciate your chance to listen to me, and I appreciate the department working with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for your federation and question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I live in Skagit, Mount Vernon, so I'm familiar with the waterfowl population numbers. But so you want to have a spring hunt of some sort for snow geese. I mean, that's what kind of what you're looking at. But the issue of an ever-growing swan population is also is going to interfere with that, I would believe, because they're in the same fields as the snow geese. The ducks are in the same field with the swans. What do you have in mind?
So we work really closely with the Trumpeter Swan Society. Martha Jordan and I have worked for years on this, and her, I won't speak for her, but I can tell you what I think she'd say. Shoot the snow geese. Our guys don't have a problem. You know, a 28-pound bird with a 3-foot long neck and a 6-foot wingspan is pretty hard to confuse with a snow goose. Just really haven't seen hunting problems. I have a swan easement on my farm that allows and encourages hunting. The swans go, okay, guns are going off, grab your coffee, let's go head up the valley and leave because, you know, the neighbor's crowded. We're not seeing, I haven't seen any conflicts personally on my farm in 30 years of having swans and geese and hunting. And I think that late season hunt, our hope is keep the birds moving, but also just give our kids more. For me as a landowner, I can go to my duck hunters and say, okay, you guys want to pay money to lease ground, fine, but you only get duck season. That early season, that late season is open, and it's for the kids. I want those kids to have a place to come, learn to hunt, maybe when it's not blowing and snowing. Seems, my opinion, a lot of folks like to hunt ducks. They come in, they set up their deeks, they 15 minutes, they've got their bag limit, they pull them up, they go home. Goose is tougher. You got to sit there all day and shiver in the field, and we're trying to recruit people as much as anything else. And the opportunity we've talked to the department about is can those early youth hunts be also have those late spring hunts give us as landowners a way to say, fine, we'll lease some ground for duck hunters, but, and I've talked to my farmers about this and said, guys, if we can get those spring hunts, could you tell your duck hunters, You only get a lease during the duck season. Leave those other seasons open for the kids. We want the geese moving off our fields, and frankly, I would rather have a poor shot, a kid that can't shoot straight, and shoots all day and just keeps scaring geese. And
I have a follow-up question then, because you may not be here this afternoon. So I think it was 1 or 2 years ago when we approved the waterfowl regulations, we went to, instead of a 2-day bag limit, we went to a 3-day bag limit. So someone that was, I'm just going to use an example, someone that from the west side is going to eastern Washington to shoot waterfowl, they now can bring back 21 ducks and 15 geese. So the situation of being only open on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, which I've always questioned, especially now that the populations are increasing dramatically, what would you propose for an increase in 1 day a week, 2 days a week? I mean, if you're not going to be here this afternoon, I'd kind of like to get your thoughts on what's a happy medium that might be reasonable.
More. And more. So, you know, there's the 107 days is the treaty limit, I think. And so if it's okay to get that, if we're not getting interference from, say, the Dusky issue, if we can get that opened in Southwest for longer, up to the 107 days, it'd be great. Just a heads up, I did talk to biologists out of the Midwest who have these massive hunt bag limits, and they said they're running into a problem. They'll get guys come in, and they shoot for 2 days. They get all the geese. They go home, and their wife says, you're not hunting anymore this year. That's enough, or the freezers are full. And so not sure that bag limits increasing. I mean, obviously, bigger's okay, but you get up into those 30 or 50 or whatever, and actually what I'm hearing from the Midwest is they're saying it's actually now making it harder to get guys out in the field multiple times. And so just, what do you do?
Sausage.
48 pounds of sausage, honey, isn't that enough?
Christmas presents.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I just I don't even know who to ask on this now. But, you know, we got 107 days, and I know that's the flyway, the treaty. And but what options are out there if we have these types of predation problems? Is there any latitude for any changes in the season that I'm not familiar with, I guess?
Well, I think the treaty season is, it works. I think we're, March 7th, March 8th every year. When our guys are really seeing the damage, it's February and early March. Geese are picking up and heading back. They're north, heading north. And so I don't think that out-of-season depredation hunt, you know, maybe that's a tool, but I think we can also work within the dates that the treaty gives us.
Good morning. My name is Kyle Spragans. I'm the new waterfowl section manager here at WDFW. Mr. Gordon, it's very nice to meet you.
Good morning.
Yes. I just wanted to address some of that. I certainly will touch on that in today's talk, but the 107 days is certainly the sort of limit that we have to work within, and the number of days in relation to goose hunting can be shifted in terms of the number of days per week that we hunt. In the Southwest Washington zone, it is related to Dusky Canada conservation. That is certainly the underlying tone of that region. But that certainly doesn't mean that that's not a possibility. One of our obligations with the Dusky Canada goose conservation is a aspect of monitoring, ensuring that we're not actually causing more harm to that population while trying to address some of the agricultural depredation concerns, which certainly are concerns in that zone. So, yes, there is certainly possibilities going forward to increase the number of days per week, but we do have to use caution in our ability to have enforcement and our district biologists be able to accomplish these monitoring aspects that are critical to keeping that season possible. Otherwise it would go away. If the Dusky Canada goose population declines, we start losing our ability to use that tool towards agricultural depredation.
From my perspective, if I may, Mr. Chair, I think I'd like maybe to suggest we get a more detailed briefing on this waterfowl management
Certainly.
Scenario in the next
4 or 5 months. I could turn in a blue sheet if need be, but yeah. I think it would be helpful to all of us, perhaps.
Certainly.
And as part of that, I'm intrigued by the youth, emphasizing the youth hunt. I think this is something that we can even work with some retriever clubs to sponsor some young people to do that, but with other partners to make this a bright thing that WDFW does. I mean, the best waterfowl youth hunt opportunity for in the West or the country, something with all of our good partners. And given our conversation yesterday with the governor about getting more youth engaged in all of these, I think this is a very good example of how we can further develop something that's good, accentuate it, publicize it, partner it up, and start to increase it.
I'll do my best to be here this afternoon. I really, it looks like some good work the department's done already, and I wanted to hear it. I'll see if I can get my conflict changed and come back and listen. All right. Appreciate your time.
Our chair, because of his age, gets a free hunting license. The only problem, similar to the youth, there's no charge, but his gun is like 1941, so.
You only need one shot.
And it's hazer. It's
hazer. Yeah, he's a great hazer, indeed, yeah.
I've given up my share of Dux's presents, though.
Thank you.
Thank you. That brings to a conclusion open public input. Very, very good input today. Thank you. It was, I think, all of your issues were spot on and things that we will follow up on and start to continue.
Are you going to do director's report now?
Yeah, I'm going to do director's report. I'm sorry. You can't. Yeah. So item number, if you wanted to sign up for the next public, you can. Yeah. Okay. Can you make it quick?
Yeah.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Go for it.
Yeah, I didn't know you had to sign up. There have been one.
Yeah, that's outside. And, I mean, normally we have to be pretty close to protocol. But
hey, my name is Rod Stewart, and I just got a concern. When you put in for, say, quality bull hunts, you have, like, two choices. But now that Weyerhaeuser charges you, you got to buy your permits for Weyerhaeuser before you find out if you get drawn. So PL sold out, South PL sold out in 4 minutes last year, May 1st. You don't find out until July if you get drawn for a permit. And I've got 14 quality points and 10 any bull permits. But if I put in for two areas, I put in $300 here, $300 here from Weyerhaeuser, then I don't get drawn. So I spent $600 plus my $8 or whatever it is, $10 or whatever it is. So why can't you move up the drawing so you know if you get drawn before you spend $600 for nothing?
That would be logical.
That's my concern. You know, you don't find out until July if you get drawn. Either that or have, why can't you, if you get drawn for a permit, why can't they have Weyerhaeuser give you a chance to buy that permit from them, even though they're sold out?
Thank you. Makes sense. Could you fill out a form, though, just so we have this on the record as well?
Yeah,
and it's out in the hallway. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you.